Welcome back. Mike Warren Thomas here. It is For Love of Food, SaverLife.com. And in the previous hour, got into the changes. Perhaps if you always listen online to my radio shows, you don't realize I'm no longer on the radio as of several days ago. But we'll be continuing with the audio available here in podcasts to those links to be set up this next week. And you can check my Facebook post for more details about why this change was made. And basically comes down to the Facebook posts that my former station, WYSL 1040, has been posting over the last several months, I guess. I really didn't notice them until recently, and I wish I had noticed them earlier. But it's they're posts that I don't want to be associated with. And I have moved on. So looking forward to doing the food show here online, and may appear on the radio at some point, one form or another. We'll let you know. You can email me anytime, michael@saverlife.com, if you have comments, questions, favorite places to eat, etc. This morning we'll talk a little bit about the history of the radio show, my food show, and also it's reopening, which I kind of had to put the post out there about leaving the station yesterday, but really the big news is that restaurants, wineries, breweries, etc. have been able to reopen indoor seating. Again, 50% occupancy, spaced 6 feet apart, people wearing masks when not seated, staff wearing masks, lots and lots of cleaning, lots of requirements. This is not easy for any business, but maybe especially restaurants. And so I hope you'll have patience, that you'll be understanding, that you'll empathize, show some empathy for the staff, the owners of these local restaurants, which they're trying really hard. Maybe there's some out there that haven't put much planning into this, but all the restaurants that I've interacted with, watch their posts online, talk to them, etc. They've put a ton of work into this. Lots of small businesses have, and you know the importance of local businesses over chains and big box stores. You know, the chains and big box stores, they have corporate offices to come up with all this and set this up and do the training and implement it all over the country. And, you know, they're probably doing a great job of it, I hope. But local independent restaurants have to, each of them have to kind of reinvent this for their own business. These are all very different spaces, indoors and outdoors, different size tables, different numbers of tables, different doors in and out. I mean, it's a huge challenge. So I was talking to one business owner a few days ago, and they had several people called and said, why aren't you open your regular hours? And I found it hard to believe that someone would actually call and say that, because there aren't too many businesses that are open regular hours right now. Often shorter hours, often not as many days a week. If anything, they're only now just getting back to somewhat regular hours. And yet there are people out there that are frustrated that they can't get what they want, maybe what they need, right when they want it. So, you know, try to have patience with businesses as they try to figure this out, as much as customers try to figure this out. And again, restaurants in particular have tons of challenges. But they're excited, I think, also, that we are reopening. And I didn't really mention it much in the gardening show this week. But more important than ever to wear a mask. I have to say I've really enjoyed and learned a lot from Governor Cuomo's daily press briefing. And I think New York State is in a great position right now compared to about 21 or 23 other states who have, since reopening, have had numbers continue to go up for infections. And New York State will probably have more infections because of this reopening. But it's really, I have confidence that they're doing the testing like no other state per capita, that we can monitor this, that they'll take contact tracing seriously. And these are the things that are going to allow us to continue to reopen. And I'm afraid this is not going to happen in every state, maybe not even in half the states. If they choose not to rein in the infection rate, their hospitals are going to be overwhelmed and there's going to be far more people dying because they weren't careful enough about reopening. So I feel lucky, I feel positive about living in New York State. There's lots of people that have problems with Governor Cuomo, there have been times when I've been pretty upset with him over things like gas storage in the Finger Lakes and trash incinerators, etc. Not that he was proposing them, but all the work that it took to try to defeat those proposals seemed like wasn't necessary, that they could have, those proposals could have been ended long before. But with this, with the coronavirus, I really appreciate the transparency that he's had, and I encourage you to go back and watch. You can find there's probably 104 of these press briefings, because it's been about 104 days since the coronavirus really struck New York, and he started these press conferences. So what's emphasized there, and also in much of the national media, and epidemiologists, scientists, wear a mask. Wear a mask when you go to a restaurant. You can take it off while you're talking with family and friends at the table. Maybe, as I've said before, put it back on when you order, when you're speaking to the wait staff member. Maybe that's a time to respect them and put your mask on. This isn't going to go on forever, but we've got to control the infection rate until there's a vaccine, or we're going to end up being shut down again because so many people will be dying. And it's not just the elderly. I was talking to someone just a couple days ago, and they said, you know, I don't know why we had to shut things down. This is only affects people who are already ill and elderly, and that's just not true. Those people are very vulnerable to this, but the numbers show lots of people of any age group getting this virus, and there are far too many of those who've had some very serious health consequences and have also died from the COVID-19. So wear a mask, be respectful of other people, and this is especially crucial right now, because we need to get restaurants to the point where they can have closer to 100% occupancy. And that may be possible if people wear masks. As the data comes in, as we slowly reopen, we'll be able to relax some of these things, and restaurants, to survive in the long run, they need 100% occupancy on Friday and Saturday nights, because that's when everyone goes out to eat. And they're just not going to survive at 50% occupancy for months. And that's my opinion, but ask any restaurant that you go in or restaurateur that you know, and I can't imagine that very many of them can survive months of 50% occupancy. So we've got to knock this virus down and relax restrictions safely, and then, you know, and then we can move ahead. One restaurateur was saying, you know, people sitting back to back, you know, we have two tables next to each other, and instead of being 6 feet apart, they're normally, I don't know, 3 feet apart. And if people are sitting back to back talking with their friends at these separate tables, they're probably not transmitting much of the virus in, you know, over their head and backwards. If they are infected, they are sending it right at their friend or family member across the table from them, and maybe other tables beyond them. So, you know, again, this, we need more research, we need more testing. Thankfully, the testing has become more available. But again, for restaurants to survive, we need more than 50% occupancy. And even 75% occupancy would be helpful, but I don't think restaurants can survive months of 75% occupancy. So it's, you know, and they're struggling to survive as it is. Consider doing takeout. I got some takeout just yesterday from Ristorante Lucano, which opened their dining rooms yesterday, along with many other restaurants, with phase three reopening. They had a nice setup. I posted a photo on Instagram for Rochester Food Net. It's rochesterfoodnet.com. And you could see some green square cloth napkins on every other table, and those were tables that weren't going to be used. And they and when I looked at the tables, I wanted to get a photo of this to post to Instagram. As you know, these tables would look a lot better if they were set up with glassware and, you know, plates and napkins and knives and forks. But as a part of this reopening, restaurants are only going to set the table once people sit down, and so tables will not be preset, which didn't help my photo any, but perhaps seeing that will remind people that that's one of the changes and one of the regulations for restaurants to follow for this reopening. So I did get takeout because my mother's 83, and luckily, you know, she's living at home, and we can eat with her. We can see her, but I think maybe better to keep her home and bring food to her at this point, or cook at home. And so I brought a couple dishes from Ristorante Lucano that were fabulous. Their vegetarian lasagna is outrageously good, and my mother loves their filet mignon. So we had a delicious dinner, got some Italian wine, which you can still do, even although the restaurants have reopened, they can still sell bottles of wine for the time being. And so takeout is still a great option. Many restaurants are offering it. They've gotten quite good at handling takeout and, you know, no touch. And really, I've felt very safe doing that. Actually, I pulled up at Ristorante Lucano. I'd called ahead and, you know, ordered several dishes for 6 o'clock pickup. And I got there a couple minutes early and pulled up and was checking email. And one of the wait staff came out and said, you know, it'll be right there. They were watching to see who was pulling up for takeout. And someone else had also pulled up and gotten takeout. And we got a couple extra dishes to put in the freezer, so we'd have some more delicious Ristorante Lucano food over the next week or two. So takeout is still a really good option. And maybe that combined with being careful. You know, in general, restaurants are not as busy on Sundays, Mondays, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, maybe even Thursdays. So if you want to avoid crowds, go early when the restaurant first opens. Avoid Fridays and Saturdays, especially at 7 o'clock. Avoid 7 o'clock on most days, but Go early, maybe make a late reservation, and you will avoid more people that way. But it's exciting to have the restaurants reopening. The wineries, many of them are reopening their tasting rooms. Breweries are. But again, not all of them are. So some restaurants are waiting, perhaps because 50% occupancy is just going to be a money loser for them. So don't assume restaurants are open, or wineries or breweries or any of these tasting rooms. Check online, but also check several sources maybe, as things are changing so quickly. Google doesn't get updated as fast, and don't want to frustrate people by going somewhere and it's not open. So keep that in mind, that you should check hours. These things are changing virtually on a daily, certainly on a weekly basis, but it feels like almost on a daily basis, partly because they're sort of last minute changes. Things like a few days ago, the Governor Cuomo said that restaurants could open with outdoor seating that's not under a fixed roof. And so a bunch of them did that before the actual phase three reopening. So and they restaurants had very little notice about that. And so not all of them did it. Quite a few did, but not all of them. Again, things are changing quickly. Also, strawberry season has begun, and I went out to Herd Orchards a couple days ago. They had 1 quart of strawberries for sale, but I had hedged my bets because I got a harvest box from them, and Amy and Amelia had said that there might be some early strawberries in those harvest boxes. So I ordered one of those, picked it up on Thursday, along with 2 rhubarb pies and some asparagus and a couple other things while I was out there. So the harvest boxes, they do each week. You can sign up to get one, or you can sign up to get them for the season. They are bringing them into Rochester on Thursday afternoons at one specific drop-off point. And so you have that option to pick them up there, or at the farm, which is just west of Brockport on Route 104. One of my favorite places to go. It's such a gorgeous farm. And they have quite limited hours right now, just Thursdays and Saturdays, and Saturdays only until 2. They are hoping and planning to do you-pick strawberries, working on the logistics of that, hand wash stations out by the strawberries, and you know, luckily that's an outdoor project to, go pick your own strawberries. Their strawberries were outrageously good. It was worth that harvest box just to have those strawberries the first of the season. Partly because my dog eats our strawberries before they're ripe. And so most years we don't get many strawberries from our garden, and our dog gets lots of them. We had a big crop this year of strawberries, and our dog has already eaten a substantial number of them. So strawberry season is just beginning, and that means if you want to get some, wherever you go to get strawberries, one of the farm markets, you might call ahead and ask them to hold them for you for a specific time that you're going to pick them up, or at least go early for the best shot at having some strawberries. Some great weather for ripening strawberries over the next week. Strawberries aren't going to be particularly happy with 60 degrees as a high, but there's more 80 degree temperatures coming, and it's going to be a great week for strawberries here in our area. And strawberries are one of the things that is available in the grocery store year-round, like 24/7, 365 days a year. You can buy strawberries in a grocery store. But it's one of those things that the local product ripened right here has so much more flavor than what you find in the grocery store. The ones in the grocery store look good, but the flavor of the local strawberries is amazing. And as I've said before, crush them once you've eaten as many as you can, crush them and freeze them, and they will taste like you just picked them when you defrost that in maybe Thanksgiving or maybe January or maybe March next year or maybe a month from now, they're gonna taste like you just picked them. I don't add sugar. I don't add pectin. I just crush them, freeze them, and they are just amazing. I just eat it by the spoonful. Fantastic local strawberries right now. And actually, the dry weather, a good thing for the strawberries. It'll mean fewer disease problems. They'll probably be needing to irrigate. And the more places irrigate, the more it dilutes the flavor of the strawberries. So they may have to irrigate. Some places are more careful about that than others. And I would do a little testing if you can. You know, try a quart of strawberries from a variety of different places. See which one you like the best. They can be quite different. Sometimes different varieties. Sometimes it's different ways that they irrigate or maintain the strawberries. So one of my favorite times of the year, strawberry season, and it is here. I want to talk a little bit about the history of my food show. I started the gardening show in 1994, and the problem I had with starting the gardening show, and only the gardening show, was that I didn't have sponsors that were open during the winter, or not enough of them. And so I had to stop doing the show. And then in the spring, I would try to restart the gardening show on Hot Talk 1280, where I was originally. And, you know, my time slots were taken by other shows. And so I would have to start at 7 a.m. instead of 9 a.m. And for those of you that know me, I'm not a huge morning person. The difference between 7 a.m. sounding coherent and 9 a.m. is immense. So when I originally started in 1994, I was on at 7 a.m., and then the shows after me gradually dropped off, and I would work my way up till 9 a.m., which I thought was kind of optimal time for me and for the listeners, hopefully. But I would lose that, and I'd have to go back to 7 a.m. And this happened for, I think, for two winters. But at some point in the third, in 1996, I heard a food show in Boston, and Pat Whitley, who I think is still on the radio in Boston, he's was last time I checked, and this was, you know, again 26 years ago that I heard him, in when I happened to be on Cape Cod, just flipping radio stations, driving somewhere on the Cape, and heard this food show. Thought, well, that sounds interesting, couldn't find him online at that point because, you know, that was like before we had cars, much less the internet in 1994 or 1996. So the problem was that he took negative calls, and he sort of covered New England, not just Boston, but it was a WBZ Boston that he was on, I think. And he took negative calls in restaurants, so people would call and say the soup was cold, the service was bad. You know, that just was kind of miserable to listen to. Didn't enjoy that at all. So I got the idea to do the food show from him, and I don't really know how to cook very much, so this wasn't going to be me telling anyone how to cook. But I knew quite a few chefs already because I love food. And when you really love food, you often end up talking to the chefs, getting to know some of the chefs. And so I started that food show, this food show in 1996. And the sponsors of my food show grew fast enough that I could afford to keep the gardening show all winter long, even though I didn't really have enough sponsors. I could subsidize that show with sponsorship from my food show. Effectively. So that allowed me to keep the time slots, which was huge. No more trying to start at 7 a.m. and be coherent. And then at some point there, I got to look back through through my records. I had Kathy Lindsley as a host, a co-host with me on the food show. And I don't recall exactly whether, I think I started the food show with her as a co-host, partly because I really admired her writing. She was the food writer for the Democrat, or restaurant writer for the Democrat and Chronicle, I think, at the time, or just had been recently, or I think it was maybe a city newspaper. But anyway, I admired her writing and worked with her as my co-host on the food show for a while, I think quite a few months, and really appreciated her and her insights, and that was a big help in trying to launch this food show. And so it didn't allow negative comments on restaurants, and really no one tried. You know, 24 years of doing the food show since 1996, I really haven't had any negative comments on restaurants, and I appreciate that. And the only, there was one kind of strange call at some point, and this will tell you how old this call was, because it was about Midtown Plaza and the restaurant banquet center up on the top of Midtown Plaza. And whoever called kind of pretended not to be associated with it, but they knew a lot about it. And they just knew way too many more details and had far too many of these details to share with us that it just looked, sounded goofy. I mean, they obviously worked there, and I would have been happy to talk to them if just wish they'd said that they worked there. And it just sounded strange when they were pretending not to work there. But that's one of the few kind of strange calls that I've had. And it was actually the food show that I started getting some international calls, not because I had listeners in other parts of the world. This was before the internet was invented, or not really, but before we were effectively using it. But there were one of my key mentors, for one, Art Delman, who worked for Eber Brothers liquor distributor for a long time. In fact, he was, before that career, a milk salesman, and really just a fascinating and very just super warm-hearted individual. He and his wife, Mary, two just salt-of-the-earth, awesome people. And we think that, you know, how long ago things happened, and people like Art were a reminder that it wasn't that long ago that Italians were really treated very poorly in this country. He changed his name. I think it was Arturo Delmonico, and he changed that to Art Delman because that was how he could get a job. And he passed away quite a few years ago now, but was a huge mentor to me and dealing with restaurants and wine, and just a fascinating person. And Art called me from France. He led a group on a tour to France for wine, and took the time out of his schedule there. It was 5 hours ahead, and so it was in the afternoon, early afternoon in France, and made sure to call the specific hour that my food show was on and say hello from France. And I'll never forget that. And frankly, the connection from France was way better than most of the phone calls that we had from local guests. And these weren't cell phone calls generally in 1996. They're often landlines, and those connections weren't as good as this call from France from Art Delman. I think he called maybe twice, two different times from tours over those early years of doing the food show. Also, Trisha Iannazzi more recently has called several times from Italy. It's been a fun connection with people from here traveling around the world. I never really set out to do a national food show. I like dealing with small local businesses, and you know, if I wanted to do a national food show, I'd have to have Whole Foods and, you know, Keebler and whatever national brands as sponsors of that. And what I love about doing this show is that I can have some of the smallest sponsors possible, you know, little 1-2 person operations. You know, Captain Jim's Seafood Market, they're a pretty small operation. It's really Bill Ceramides most of the time, with his father, the captain, and Kathy comes in to help in the afternoons. Small operations, places that just don't advertise. I could have as sponsors because the radio time was inexpensive enough that I could have these small businesses be a part of the show. And so many of these sponsors, as I mentioned during the gardening show this morning, have been with me for 4 decades. I'm very proud of these sponsors, for how hard they work, how passionate they are. Places like Tony Galassi's family of restaurants, the Max of Eastman Place, Aunt Rosie's, Max Chop House. These are phenomenal restaurants, and opening a restaurant is difficult enough. Keeping it consistent for a couple of years is, given the number that fail, incredibly hard to do. But to have these restaurants for decades is just very, very seldom done. And Tony Galassi's been a key part of the restaurant scene in Rochester for a long, long time, and continues to be. Places like Dr. Constantine Frank, they've been sponsors for a couple of decades. Rohrbach's, John Erlob, opened in 1991 and been a sponsor pretty much ever since I started the food show on the radio. We have Fox Run and Anthony Road, long, long, long term sponsors. Lombardi's Gourmet Foods, Anthony and Mary Lombardi in Fairport, just so passionate about food. And it's the kind of place that, you know, you send people, recommend they go there, and you want to hear back from them. You know, how'd you like it? What'd you taste? What'd you get? Because these are fun places to visit, really special places. The Brown Hound downtown, they have not reopened yet, but will be in the near future. Can't wait for that. These are special places. Abundance Market, I'm often in there. Stewart Spices, Cheesy Eddie's. These are, you know, just such special places. Herd Orchards, I interviewed them last weekend. You can hear interviews with all three generations. Interviewed Amy on the gardening show, her daughter Amelia on the food show, and her mother Sue. Heard Mackamer on Discover the Finger Lakes last weekend. And those shows are up on my website. So thank you to all of our sponsors over these years, and I look forward to continuing to promote them. They are truly special places. Also a note that Newbury Park Pastries is having vendors once again today, as they have on most Saturdays for the last couple of months, at their Mushroom Boulevard location in the Genesee Regional Market. So basically 11 to 3, there'll be half a dozen vendors, farmers, foods, local food producers that are there, and a pretty quiet market. If you want to avoid the crowds, this is a great one to go to, and make sure to get maybe a Penang pot pie or shepherd's pot pie or some of the desserts that Kate Schlenker makes for Newbury Park Pastries, and all the other wonderful vendors that are there. The Brighton Market is open, and for the last several weeks, you've been able to shop without pre-ordering. They had that restriction when they first opened the market 3 or 4 weeks ago, but now you don't have to pre-order. Pre-ordering is encouraged, and some vendors might require it, but in general, you can shop now at the Brighton Farmers Market. Wear a mask, as always, and that's, of course, on Sundays, 9 to 1 p.m. Again, I'm excited about this change. I'm excited about being free and independent, and looking forward to your comments and questions. Email me, michael@saverlife.com. We'll be back next Saturday with the next edition of For the Love of Food here at saverlife.com.